Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kiva Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50, chapter entitled Krishna Establishes Dwarka. Text number 9. Itad ato bataro yam bhupara haranaya me samra samrakshanaya satunam krito nyesham padaya cha etad arto vataro yam bhubara haranaya me. Samrakshanaya satunam kritonye sham vadhaya cha itad arto vataro yam ubara haranaya me Samrakshanaya satunam Ritonye sham vadaya cha. Etat
for this.
Arta. Purpose.
Avatara.
Descent.
Descent.
I am. This boo of the earth. Para, the burden. Haranaya, for removing.
May,
by me.
Samrakshanaya,
for the complete protection.
Satunam
of the saintly.
Kritaha
done.
Anyesham
of others.
The non-saintly.
Vataya
for killing.
Cha also. Sorry,
hang.
Translation and purpose by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. This is the purpose of my present incarnation, to relieve the earth of its burden, protect the pious, and kill the impious. Translation responsibly. This is the purpose of my present incarnation.
This is the purpose of my present incarnation.
To relieve the earth of its burden.
To relieve the earth of its burden.
Protect the pious, and kill the impious. Text 10. I also assume other bodies to protect religion and to end irreligion, whenever it flourishes in the course of time. Text 11. Sukadeva Goswami continued, as Lord Govinda was thinking in this way, two chariots as effulgent as the sun suddenly descended from the sky. They were complete with drivers and equipment. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur agree that the chariots came down from the Lord's own abode, Vaikuntha Loka, the kingdom of God. The faithful devotees of the Lord derive tremendous pleasure by observing the Lord's incomparable technology. Omagyan, Timadandasya, Gidanjana, Shalakaya, Chakshun, Militam Yena, Tasmai, Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Pancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So once again we see in these pastimes that Krishna's pastimes are simply enacted for his pleasure. Even this particular pastime would be very frightening for most people in a material sense, that 23 Akshahini divisions come to the gateway of your city and surround your city and then demand that you come out and fight. Now we see in the Mahabharata that the Pandavas were banished for 13 years into the forest. And in the 14th year, they had to hide incognito for 1 year. And Duryodhana made the deal with them that after that 1 year, or during that 1 year, if they were found by the by Duryodhana's party, they would have to go back into the forest for another 13 years. So they were masters of disguise. This was part of the training of the Kshatriyas. They had to know how to go into disguise. There's many purposes for doing this. One purpose was that the Kshatriya or the king would disguise himself and he would sneak around the kingdom and he would listen to what all the citizens were saying about him, about the government. Were they actually satisfied? Because what happens a lot, especially now in Kali Yuga, it's very prevalent, that the leaders have lost touch with the public, with the citizens. So you can imagine if John Howard or any other modern politician disguised themselves and went and sat on the tram, you know, in a disguise, and then, you know, listened to what the citizens were saying about them, then they would not get many favourable reports. So the Kshatriyas in the previous times, Lord Ramachandra did this also. Lord Ramachandra went out and went amongst the citizens at night time, dressed with a cloak and so forth, and he was listening to what the citizens were saying. And in general, the citizens were very happy with Lord Ramachandra because he was a perfect king. But then there was one sudra, and he was chastising his wife because his wife had gone off with another man, and then she came back to him. And then he said, "I am not like Lord Ram, right? Who will accept his wife back after she's been taken by another person." Because Lord Ram's wife, Sita, was taken by Ravana. Actually, Sita was not taken by Ravana. The real Sita was not taken by Ravana. The Maya Sita was taken by Ravana. But still, Lord Ramachandra took the criticism of the citizen so seriously that he actually rejected Sita. He said, "I cannot accept you as my wife anymore because the citizens are losing faith in me because they feel like I have stepped beyond religious principles." So we see that in these pastimes, then sometimes the Kshatriyas would dress up and they would go in disguise around their kingdom to find out what was taking place. That. So this was done many times, and we see that in the Mahabharata, when it was done by the Pandavas were sent into exile for that 14th year. And while they're in the 14th year, while they're in exile, Duryodhana was looking for them all over Bharatvarsha, all over India. They're travelling all, he's sending spies everywhere to find them. So the Pandavas decided to hide within the kingdom of Virat. So they dressed up in different disguises. Yudhishthira went to Virat in a disguise and he said that, "I am Yudhisthira's minister. I am the counselor of Yudhisthira. That's how he presented himself. I'm not Yudhisthira, but I'm Yudhisthira's counselor. Please accept me in your court as your counselor. I can give you counsel for this 1 year, because Yudhisthira is hiding for 1 year. Everyone knew what was taking place, so he was hiding for 1 year. So I will sit in your court and I will assist you for 1 year by giving you counsel. And then Bhimasen came in, and he was 12 foot tall, and disguised himself. And he came in and he said, I am Bhima's cook. Like that. So I will cook for you for 1 year. And he said, yeah, very good. Yeah, I'd like to have a cook like you. He said, I'm also good at wrestling. Like that. So that was a pastime which took place later on. Like that. And then Nakula and Sahadev also came in. And one of them said, I am Yudhisthira's horse trainer. I look after Yudhisthira's horses. So he said, very good. You can take care of the horses for 1 year. And what did the other one say? He was looking after the cows, like that. So he was the looking after the cows. So then he looked after the cows for 1 year. Nakula and Sahadev took care of the cows. And then Arjuna had been cursed, because when they were in the forest for 13 years, Arjuna went to the heavenly planets to receive astras from the demigods and training from the demigods, right? Because the battle was coming. Kurukshetra was coming inevitably. So Arjuna needed weapons. Astras, divine mantras and weapons, which could only be given by the demigods themselves. So he went to the heavenly planets with his father, Indra, for a period of time. And while he stayed there, and then he learnt dancing from the Gandharvas, and he made very good friends with some of the Gandharvas in the heavenly planets. And they taught him dancing, and they taught him different musical... He studied music while he was in the heavenly planets, heavenly music. So he became very expert. But while he was there, he was also favoured by one of the Apsaras, and one of the beautiful girls in the heavenly planets. Which one was it? Urvashi. No, she's famous. Menaka, Urvashi. These are very famous society girls in the heavenly planets. So Urvashi, she was very favourable towards Arjuna. And she came to him in the middle of the night and proposed that they unite. That they enjoy sexual intercourse in the middle of the night. So then when Urvashi came to Arjuna, because Arjuna's heart was pure, because he was a pure Vaishnava, a pure devotee, he wouldn't even look her in the eye. He was only looking at her feet, and he was calling her Mataji, which is appropriate to address any woman who is not your wife. Only your wife can be looked at in a different way. The husband and wife can associate differently. They can be more intimate, even conjugal association between the husband and wife. But between any other woman and any other man, then it must be very formal dealings. So therefore, he addressed her as Mataji. And he said, Mother, why have you come in the middle of the night like this? And she said, I've come to enjoy with you. And he said, I cannot enjoy with you because you are my mother. And she said, how am I your mother? And he said, because one of my predecessors in the Kuru dynasty, when he left this world, then he took birth in the heavenly planets, as the Kshatriyas often do. They take birth in the heavenly planets. So he took birth in the heavenly planets, and he has already enjoyed with you. Right? So how can I enjoy with someone who has been enjoyed by my forefather? So therefore you're in the category of my mother. So therefore there's no possibility of us enjoying together. And she said, well, in the heavenly planets, these kind of things do not matter. In the heavenly planets, there can be sexual union. There's no karmic reaction, even if it's outside of marriage. Indra, who is married to Sachi Devi, that's his wife, he can enjoy with the Apsaras if he so desires, and there's no karma, because that's the rules in the heavenly planets. You know, it's a different rules to what's here on Earth. But on Earth, if you enjoy with someone outside of marriage, then there are reactions, karmic reactions for that. So she said, there is no karma, we can enjoy together. And Arjuna just said no. He said, we cannot enjoy because you are my mother. So she became infuriated. Right? She was completely, this was like for her a terrible insult. She'd practically probably never been rejected by any male ever, like that. So she was so well known across the universe for her beauty. And Arjuna was saying, no, I do not want to enjoy with you. So then she cursed him. She said, you will become a eunuch for 1 year. Like that. So it means when you go back to earth, you'll be impotent for 1 year. I think she actually cursed him to stay impotent. The curse was, you'll be a eunuch. Like that. And then Arjuna went to Indra and he said, you know, this is a bit of a problem. You know, I'm a Kshatriya, you know. I'm part of the Kuru dynasty. And I'm one of the, you know, emperors of the world. I'm in the royal family. And I've been cursed to be a eunuch. And Indra said, don't worry, I'll speak to Urvashi. She sometimes gets a little angry. So then he went to Urvashi and he said, please, can you reduce this curse? She said, okay, I'll curse him for 1 year of earthly time, which is not very long in the heavenly planets like that. So Indra came back to Arjuna and he said, don't worry. He said, this will be helpful in due course of time. So when he came back to earth, then they were banished. They went into cognito for 1 year in Virat's kingdom. And when they were in the kingdom of Virat for that 1 year, Arjuna came into the court after Yudhishthira had come in and after Bhima and Nakula and Sahadeva had come in. And then he came in and he introduced himself. And he said, I am the a member of Yudhishthira's court. I am the teacher of dances to the princesses within the palace, like that. So then they're a little bit suspicious, like that, because he's a man. But he was dressed up kind of feminine. How do they say it? Effeminate. So he was dressed up like, you know, he plaited his hair like a girl, and he was putting flowers in his hair, and I don't know, maybe he had some makeup on. You know, he dressed very nicely. This is Arjuna. You know, this is the most powerful warrior on earth. You know, and he's dressing up like a, you know, like an effeminate. You know. And he came in and he said, oh, I'm Arjuna. Like, I don't know what he called himself, but he came in. What's it?
Brihadnala.
So he came in and said, I'm Brihadnala. You know, and I'm a very nice dancer, and I can teach all the princesses how to dance, like that. So they thought this is a little suspicious, so they inspected him, and they said, yes, he is impotent. He doesn't have any sex desire. He doesn't have capability to impregnate the girls. So then they allowed him to go into the inner chambers. And then he trained Uttara, who was later to become the wife of Abhimanyu, Arjuna's son. He trained Uttara, who was the daughter of Virat, how to dance. And how to sing, and he was very expert. So he taught her for 1 year all these things. So in this way, the five of them were hiding for 1 year. So then what happened is the Kurus, at the very end of the 1 year, the Kurus got wind that the Pandavas may be hiding in the kingdom of Virat in disguise. So then they said, okay, we'll draw them out. And we'll bring them out, because they're obviously incognito, so we need a plan to bring them out. So what they did, they went to Virat's kingdom and they stole all of his cows. And then they said the Pandavas will definitely come out and fight. There's something. Do I miss something?
They didn't have a Pandava. They didn't even suspicious. They weren't even suspicious.
Really?
Yeah, they did suspect.
I think they suspected. Why would they why would the Kurus just go and take Virat's cows?
They explained that they wanted to take Virat's kingdom.
Was it Duryodhana the Tanaki? Yeah, I think from memory there's something there.
Yeah, Duryodhana was still.
I think someone had got wind that there was something going on.
Somebody messengers came back and something. They never said it directly, but they basically said this is very likely during an answer, yes, they came. What excuse can you make to go there?
Yeah, I think they got some wind that there's a possibility they were actually in the kingdom at the time. From memory, that's what I remember it like that. So then they went to the king and they stole all of the cows. So they took the cows and they were taking them away, the Kurus, and then was Virat absent from the kingdom?
Yeah, he was fighting Duryodhana sent a decoy.
Okay, so he was fighting. He was fighting somewhere else, so he could not protect the cows. So then the only one who could protect was Virat's son. Does anyone remember the name of the son? Virat's son. So he sent the son, who was the prince. Arjuna was dressed up as, you know, Brihadnala, the girl, like as the dance teacher. And he said, you have to go out and protect the kingdom. You know, he got him all like fired up like a Kshatriya, you know, and Kshatriya is like, you know, if someone says, you know, step outside, right, then you have to step outside. It's a Kshatriya. You know, if you're challenged, you have to prove your prowess like that, because the citizens lose faith if the Kshatriya does not step outside. Just like in the news yesterday, John Howard was taking off from Iraq in the plane, and the plane filled up with smoke, right? It's on the news. He's right running out the back of the plane. You know, this is like the leader of the country, big, powerful leader, like that. And if you said to him, if you said to John Howard, you know, you go and fight these, you know, Al-Qaeda forces, or you lead the battle, you'll say, well, you know, I've got to go back to Canberra because I've got a lot of paperwork to do, and, you know, I've got to meet the Queen and I've got to have tea, you know, like that. So they're not really chaturas. But previously, if the chatura is challenged, he would have to fight, because the citizens have to have faith that the chatura will protect us, he will look after us. So Arjuna got this son of Virata fired up, and he said, you please go out and protect the kingdom. Go and get the cows, defeat the Kauravas, and bring the cows back. So he said, yes, I will do it. So he got on the chariot, and Arjuna said, I will drive, Brihadnala said, I will drive the chariot. You know, I'm a very good chariot driver, also learnt that. So I'll drive the chariot for you. He said, okay, no problem. So Arjuna jumps on, you know, dressed up as, you know, as Brihadnala, and drives the chariot out, and the chaturi, you know, the prince is in the back, and he's all ready to fight. And he gets out there, and he sees the Kauravas. Right? And the Kauravas means Bhishma, Drona, Duryodhana, Karna, I mean, Kripa, like that. I mean, these are like undefeatable warriors. These warriors are like, I mean, they're more powerful than the demigods, these warriors. These are the most powerful entities in the universe. And when he saw them, he said to Brihadnala, he said, turn the chariot back. He said, go back. He said, I forgot something. Like that, just go back. Just get out of here. They can have the cows, I don't care. And Arjuna was just disgusted. He said, yeah, Brihadnala, he said, this is not cool. So he drove the chariot across to like a tree on the top of a hill. There was the top of a hill and there was a tree. And in the tree, very uncultured people used to hang corpses. So no one would go there, because in Vedic culture you burn the body. But then some uncultured people were hanging corpses in the tree of some like black magic or something. So Arjuna hanged all of his weapons, Gandiva, the bow, his famous bow Gandiva and everything. All the weapons were in the tree. So he drove up and he got all the weapons, and then he said, you drive the chariot. And he said, oh, fine. And he said, who are you? And he said, I'm Arjuna. He said, yeah, just drive the chariot. Yeah. So he drove the chariot, the prince drove the chariot, and Arjuna, you know, got up. And he twung his bow, Gandiva. Boom, like, you know, got the bow, he strung the bow and he twung it. And when that bow twung, it sounded like a thunderclap. That's how powerful the bow was. The bow was actually given to him by Varuna, by the water god. I mean, the bow was famous. And Arjuna actually took a vow when he received the bow. He took a vow that if anyone ever insulted him and said to him that you are not worthy to carry that bow, because that bow was famous all through the universe, anyone who ever said you are not worthy to carry that bow, he would kill them. And then later in the Mahabharata, Yudhishthira insulted him. He said, you are not worthy to carry that bow. And then he was stuck. He was like, now what do I do? Because I've taken a vow to kill anyone who said that. So he had to kill Yudhishthira. And he said to Krishna, he started crying. He said to Krishna, what am I going to do? I can't kill Yudhishthira, but I have to kill him. So Krishna said, kill him with your words. Then he insulted him. He said, it was because of you that you, and he was crying while I was saying it, because it broke his heart to have to speak disrespectfully to Yudhishthira. But he said, you were the one who caused the battle, and you did not protect Draupadi, and you were the one who did the gambling match, and totally. And Yudhishthira was crying from the insults like that. And then at the end of it, then he paid his obeisances and he said, I'm sorry. And then he went out and fought on the battlefield again. So when he twung the bow, then the Kauravas, they knew what was going on. They thought, okay, we've found them. We've found the Pandavas, like that. But then when they looked at him, you know, he was dressed, he had like plaits and, you know, ribbons in his hair and all, and they thought, you know, it's obviously Arjuna. You just look at him, it's obviously Arjuna. What's all this about? So then he had one weapon, which was a sleep weapon. He chanted a mantra, and when he chanted them, he'd fire the arrow. And what the chaturis would do, they would put the arrow onto the bow, and then just as they would shoot the arrow, they would chant one mantra. And then the mantra would infuse the bow, and the would infuse the arrow, and the arrow would become infused with that type of weapon. So they would chant the mantra of Agni, like a fire weapon. And then when they shot the arrow, it would turn into a fireball. Or they would chant the mantra of Indra, and then the arrow would turn into a lightning bolt. And then they would shoot it, and it would come like a lightning bolt. Or they'd shoot like a water weapon, Varuna's weapon. So he had all these different weapons at their disposal. So then he had one very powerful weapon, which was a sleep weapon. So he chanted this mantra, and he shot the sleep weapon, and he put them all to sleep. All the Kurus, right? And they all just passed out in ignorance like that. The only one who wasn't unconscious was Bhishma. But Bhishma just went along with the program. So he just laid down on his chariot, but actually he was okay. So then Arjuna went and he took all of the like the headpieces, the crowns of all the Kauravas. He took Karna, he took Duryodhana, he took their crowns, which is a great insult. If a Kshatriya comes and takes your crown, that's like, it's a symbol of defeat. So he took all of their crowns, he got all the cows back, and he took them all back into the palace like that, and he saved everyone like that. So then later on, Duryodhana, he said, well, now we've found you. But then Yudhishthira said, well, I'm sorry, you know, according to the watch, the time's up. Right? The 14th year just finished yesterday. So actually you haven't found us. So you should give us back the kingdom, half the kingdom. He said, actually the kingdom was Yudhishthira's. But Yudhishthira was so noble that he said to Duryodhana, who was his enemy, who tried to kill him, he said, you have half. You're our cousins, you have half, and we'll have half. And Duryodhana said, I will not give you as much land as you can drive a pin into. So then at that point in time, then Krishna said, there's no choice. Now we have to begin. We have to fight the battle. So the point is that these Kshatriyas were so powerful that even when they were against insurmountable odds, they did not become intimidated. And we see here that Krishna and Balaram are the supreme Kshatriyas. They're the supreme heroic personalities. And we see in this pastime that Jarasandha has come to Mathura to attack the city. And he's brought with him 23, I think it is, Akshahini divisions. Right? That's like a massive amount. That's like millions of soldiers. And they've surrounded the city. And then how does Krishna respond?
Walks out with a flower garland.
Yeah, he's wearing a flower garland as he goes on. Puts on a flower garland, right? Because you have to look good when you go to battle. Right? No one else wears a flower garland in a battle, on a battlefield. But Krishna puts on a flower garland, dresses everything nicely. Right? And then he goes out into battle like that, dressed very nicely, totally composed, totally unflustered. So Krishna, he said to Balaram, let's go and destroy these armies. And then it says in the previous purport that as Krishna and Balaram went out, Krishna was thinking to himself, how shall I defeat Jarasandha? Should I kill the army but not Jarasandha? Or should I kill Jarasandha and take the army for myself? Or perhaps should I just kill both of them? So that's Krishna. That's how powerful Krishna is. He's just contemplating all that. He's just completely in control of the situation. And he's just contemplating to himself, what should I do? You know, should I just destroy Jarasandha, right, and take his armies? Or should I destroy the armies and just leave Jarasandha by himself? Or should I take, or should I just destroy both of them like that? So him and Balaram, they drove out. I mean, can you imagine, you know, the temple being surrounded by, you know, say, you know, conservatively, say 50,000 people. You know, 50,000 screaming, demoniac people who hate Hare Krishnas. Right? And then Glenn and Nudava, you know, just put on a flower garland, you know, go and get the cars, you know, grab a couple of
cartels.
Yeah, cartels is good. Grab the cartels like that. Grab a couple of, you know, spoons from the kitchen. Some of the big, you know, ladles. Yeah, the big ladles, you know, the big white ones. Yeah. And then they just drive out, right? Just totally confident. Okay, let's go. Should we kill them all? Right? Or should we kill, you know, leave one of them like that? Or should we kill the leader and all of them as well like that? That's what Krishna and Balaram did. They just got on the chariots and they just drove out the city just by themselves with since they had a few assistants, like a small amount of warriors coming, not like an army, just went out. And then within a short time, it says, within a short time, Krishna began to rain arrows upon the army. And it says in the battle of Kurukshetra, that during the battle, that when Arjuna would arm Gandiva, he would pull the arrows from his quiver. It says you could not tell when he was pulling the arrow from his quiver, when he was loading the bow, and when he was shooting the arrows. He said it was just like one motion. He couldn't even perceive what was going on. And every time Arjuna was shooting an arrow, he would chant a mantra, and the mantra would turn each arrow into 100 arrows. So it's just like a rain. It was like raining. It was just raining arrows. And it said when Arjuna was going across the battlefield, Krishna was driving the chariot, it was like mowing the lawn. You know, when you go, you know, you're mowing the lawn, like you just like that, and just all the grass just goes. So Krishna was just driving the chariot, and Arjuna was just like mowing the soldiers down. It was just like raining arrows, right? And not one of Arjuna's arrows missed their target. There was no, you know, arrows just going here and going there. Every single one of them was just hitting the target. Right? He was just like, just Krishna was driving across. It said there was 640 million warriors, and practically speaking, well, not all of them were on Arjuna's side. So it means 11, so about two-thirds of them were on the Kaurava side. Two-thirds of the 640 million, about 400 million warriors. Arjuna took care of two-thirds of them just by himself. He was just, Krishna was just driving the chariot, and Arjuna was just destroying them like that. So in the same way, in this pastime, Krishna has come out, and it says in a short time, he destroys 23 Akshahini divisions. He just begins to rain arrows, right? And he's dancing on the battlefield. When you see someone like Krishna, a warrior like Krishna, fighting, while they fight, it looks like they're dancing. That's how dexterous and how would you say it?
Expert
and
valiant. Valiant.
Valiant, yeah. And like just elegant, yeah. Just so elegant in their fighting. It's like he's dancing. He's just dancing around the battlefield. And everyone's just watching him and like mesmerized by his beauty and by his expertise. He's just dancing and he's, you know, he's so captivating. And he's just destroying unlimited warriors. And they're all just meditating on him at the time of death. And they all go to Vaikuntha because they see the Lord at the time of death. Those who are not envious of him. So what Krishna decides to do is that when he comes out, he thinks, what shall I do? You know, shall I just kill them all? Right? Including Jarasandha, or shall I leave Jarasandha, or shall I just kill Jarasandha and take all the armies? But then Krishna thinks to himself that my mission, or one of the parts of my mission, is to destroy all the demoniac forces on the earth. So what I'll do, I'll leave Jarasandha and I'll destroy all the warriors who are there. So then he goes onto the battlefield, and in a short amount of time, he kills like 23 Akshahini divisions. There's like millions upon millions of soldiers, just totally destroys them all, him and Balaram. They just go there and they just dance across the battlefield, and everyone's gone. And then the only ones left is Jarasandha. And then he says to Jarasandha, he says, you just had a bad day. You know, you're just out of luck today, that's all. He said, go back to your kingdom. This is an insult. I mean, to a Kshatriya, this is like an insult. He said, just go back to your kingdom and get yourself together. You know, just get yourself back together and then come back and fight later. Mm-hmm. Like that. So then Krishna releases Jarasandha. He just says, go back. And Jarasandha is just completely beside himself. He can't understand what's going on. And all of his friends, his associates, his ministers, tell him, you just had bad luck. Right? It was just inauspicious. There's something inauspicious took place, and you just had a bad day, and everything went wrong for you, and it was nothing to do with you. And Jarasandha buys the advice, which is the nature of demoniac people, or people whose false egos are way too big. You say to them, you know, they've totally been humiliated and look like a total fool, but then they'll say, no, I just had a bad luck. I just had a run of bad luck. Actually, I'm still in total control. I'm actually still the supreme entity within the universe, and tomorrow I'll come back and everything will be back to normal again. You know, something just happened. So then he goes away, and after 1 year, he assembles another army of the same size, 23 Akshahini divisions, and then he comes back again, and he comes to fight Krishna again, surrounds Mathura again, and Krishna did it again, comes out and destroys everything. And then his ministers say, well, you just had a bad luck again. Come back next year. So this goes on 17 years, right? And what Krishna is doing is he's just destroying all the demoniac warriors on the earth, because the earth had been overcome by too many demoniac warriors and it was a burden for the earth. So Krishna was just destroying them all, and this was part of his mission. So after 17 years, we see in these next couple of, in this chapter, later in this chapter, after 17 years, on the 18th year, the 18th time that Jarasandha comes to fight with Krishna, Krishna just thought, this is too much. This is like, you know, this person is not learning his lesson, you know. And this is, as devotees, we have to learn that when Krishna is trying to teach us something, when Krishna is making us humble, you know, sometimes in your life, something just begins to manifest and you just realize, here we go again. You know, you just have this realization, Krishna's about to smash me again. You know, anyone get that experience? Like that? You know, it happens usually, you know, once in a while. well, that happens less if you start learning your lessons. That happens less, but once in a while you just feel the momentum building up. And you just feel, here we go. Krishna's just going to smash me. There's something. He's just arranging the situation and he's going to smash me. So the devotees, they should have this kind of consciousness that when Krishna does this to them, then they accept it. In other words, they become humble and then they accept Krishna has a lesson here, which he's trying to teach me. And because he's trying to teach me this lesson, I should surrender to this lesson that Krishna is trying to teach me, and I should learn what Krishna is trying to teach me here, instead of trying to resist it, like that. Because if we resist it, if we don't accept that Krishna is trying to humble us and trying to purify our consciousness, then we'll just commit the same mistake again, and Krishna will just have to beat us again. And we have to understand that we cannot resist Krishna's force. Sometimes, you know, we think, oh, we're very confident, and we think we're very together, and we think we're very intelligent, like that. I remember last year, I got smashed by Krishna, and one of my gurus, actually, one of my Shiksha gurus, they gave me an instruction. They said, do this. And I thought in my mind, yes, they are more advanced than me, right? They are more pure than me, but I am more intelligent than them. Right? Which is very stupid. Right? It's a big capital D for dumb. Right? So they gave me the instruction and I didn't follow it. Right? It was just a service which would have taken several minutes, but I didn't do it, right? Because I thought, you know, I'm more intelligent than them, and you know, why they asked me to do that doesn't need to be done like that. So then what happened is that Krishna smashed me because I didn't have the right attitude. Right? The attitude was incorrect. So Krishna had to smash me. So he spent about, for that 2 minutes, which I did not do the right thing, he spent about 6 weeks just smashing me. Right? Because why, and then you can say, well, where's the justification? You know, I mean, you can look to, you know, the Supreme Person and you can say, where's the justification? You know, I think maybe you should read some management books or something. You know, yeah, 2 minutes for 6 weeks is like, you know, you know, what's going on? You know, it's like, I don't think. No, but Krishna is the perfect teacher. And the reason Krishna strings these punishments out is because Krishna wants to embed upon our subtle body, upon even our soul, he wants to embed a very deep lesson, a samskara, an impression. So he wants that to go very deeply. So sometimes he'll really push you, like really push you down, and really make it a very intense ordeal, because then it will stick in your consciousness. So then if you ever think to do that again, because that particular person who gave me that instruction, if I ever receive that instruction again, then I'll be much more careful in my mind not to do that again, like that. Because we have to learn our lessons. We have to become humble. That's the ultimate lesson that we're being taught by Krishna. We have to become humble servants of Krishna. Because the qualification to go into Vaikuntha, into Goloka Vrindavan, into the spiritual world, you have to be a humble servant of Krishna. The pure devotees are humble servants of Krishna. Just like you see Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was such a competent person. Right? He's such a competent person. He's such an expert manager. Right? He was a world famous author. Right, he has the Guinness Book. He has the world record for, he's the most prolific author in modern history. Right, he's not. If you look in the Guinness Book of Records, under the most prolific author in the last 100 years or something, you know, Srila Prabhupada holds the world record. No one's written more than Prabhupada. Like, you have a look at what Prabhupada wrote, Shakespeare or any modern writer. And there's no one who's been as prolific as an author as Prabhupada. And Prabhupada did most of that in 12 years. It wasn't his whole life's work. That was like practically he just did that in the last decade or so. That was more or less, you know, he put the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita, he translated that into something like 3 months. The entire CC, the whole purports and everything in 3 months. And actually it's interesting because if you look at the fifth canto, he writes at the end of the fifth canto, he says, I completed the fifth canto in 1975. So that means if you look at all the books in the Bhagavatam and the CC, that was all done after 75, the last 2 years. And the last 6 months he didn't do that much translation work because he was very ill. So you just have a look. He's not an ordinary personality. And yet, being far more confident than all of us put together, if you put all of our material and spiritual assets together, all of us here, right? And then it doesn't even equal Prabhupada. And yet Prabhupada was totally humble. And that's what it means to be a pure devotee. Right? A pure devotee is so qualified and yet so humble. Right? Topmost qualification and topmost deepest humility. That's a pure devotee. So Krishna wants us to become like that. So therefore, that's why he gives these lessons. And Jarasandha is like a major fool, because, you know, if someone has to spend 17 times like smashing you and you still don't get the lesson, Krishna just said, let's just go to Dwarka. You know, what's the use of living here in Mathura? Right, we're here in Mathura. This is the, because Mathura was the capital of the Kuru dynasty. No, the Yadu dynasty. The Kuru dynasty's capital was Hastinapur, which if you look in India, where Delhi is, that's where Hastinapur was. So that's where the Kuru's capital was. And the Yadu's capital, who were their cousins, who were the other powerful dynasty on earth, their capital was in
Mathura,
which is only like 3 hours drive. Or back then it would have taken a little bit longer. Like
150
kilometers, like that. But then Krishna didn't want the Yadus, he didn't want his devotees to be inconvenienced by these demons coming down there, you know, every year to try to surround the city, and Krishna was just getting a little fed up. So then he said, let's move the capital. Right? So what did he do? He built a capital which was floating on the water. So he moved off the coast of Gujarat, right, off the coast of West India, and he built a city which was floating on the water. Right, and the city was floating out there in the water, so therefore no one could attack the Yadu dynasty. Because the Yadu dynasty was covered, surrounded by three sides by the ocean. So it's very difficult to conquer if you've ever fought a battle, you know, in your previous lifetimes. It's very difficult to conquer a city which is surrounded by water. So Krishna went out there in Dwarka and he set up the whole city just to protect the Yadu dynasty. And then the demons didn't stop coming. Right, Sholva and different demons, they still came. Dantavakra, they still came. They still harassed Krishna over in Dwarka. But Krishna wouldn't fight them in Dwarka. He would come back to the land. They would get boats and they'd come back to the land, and then he'd fight them on the land. And that's where they would destroy them. So we see these kind of pastimes, for those who have faith in Krishna as being the Supreme Lord, these pastimes establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because no one else could do what Krishna does. There's no one else who could do what Krishna does. No one else could, you know, defeat an army that big by themselves, right, within a matter of, you know, a short amount of time. So this is the way Krishna displays his Aishwarya, or his supremacy, or his opulence as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these pastimes are very relishable for the devotees, because we get to see Krishna's unlimited power and his sweetness within his pastimes. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Some people will say that these are just stories and make believe, and there's no evidence for them. So how do you combat such a argument?
That there's no evidence for them. There is some evidence. Even now, if you look scientifically, in the Bay of Dwarka, like that, if you go to where Dwarka is now in Gujarat, which is the same place as where it was in the ocean, for years, even for decades, they've been finding archaeological findings which are supporting that there was some sort of civilization, and it seems that civilization was in fact based on the ocean, as the so-called mythology says. And apparently recently they've had very significant findings. So then if you want to get scientific, because some people are just empirical, which means, you know, everything has to be proven by sensual perception, like that. So if people are going to argue on that level, then we can, you know, we can call in some evidence to say that. And then also from Sri Lanka to India, they say that, you know, Sri Lanka was Ravana's kingdom. They're saying that there's evidence of a bridge. You know, they're seeing from satellite, they're finding that there was a bridge going there. In Devamrita Swami's book, In Search of Vedic India, he goes into a lot of these kind of points. He gets onto the empirical level to argue and to explain and to prove many of the facts about Krishna. Now, one fact which is very significant and which has a lot of weight in establishing the Vedas, is that for years the river Saraswati, right, which no longer flows in India, hasn't flown in India for, it dried up hundreds of years ago, maybe thousands of years ago, the river Saraswati. But in the Vedas, which I think the scholars, like the material scholars and so forth, I think that they accept at this point in time that the Vedas may be 3,000 years old, the Rig Veda or something. We say it's written down 5,000 years ago and it predates that, but I think they're saying 3,000 or something like that. So in the Vedas, even if we say, okay, it's 3,000 years old, we take their version. They say 3,000 years ago it was written that there was this river Saraswati, right? And they've always said one way to disprove that the Vedas are modern or a mythology is that there's no river Saraswati. The river Ganges is there, the river Jamuna is there, but the third river, the Saraswati, is not there because it's dried up. But then now they've got satellites, they've discovered, because if you have satellites you can trace where rivers were, because you know the riverbed's embedded, you know, you can see the track where it ran. And even the moisture of the earth is different. They can track that by satellite now, so they can actually detect where a river previously was. So they found this river, Saraswati, which runs from the Himalayas down to the ocean. They found that by satellite. And now, you know, so that proves the legitimacy of the Vedas. In other words, it's not mythology, because the river, so we can use these kind of arguments too.
Thanks. But for ourselves over here, I've heard many times of Dwarka.
What's that?
For ourselves, I've heard that Dwarka actually, when Krishna wrapped up his pastimes, Mayadhanava took the entire place and left nothing for him.
No, it says in the Bhagavatam that it sunk into the ocean. That's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
It sunk into the ocean. So the thing is, when you're mixing spiritual things and material things, you know, I mean, there's always going to be some discrepancy anyway, because, you know, if it's the Lord's abode, you know, on one level, that's going to be spiritual. And if there's anything which appears to be material, which is left, it's like when Krishna left the world, he left a material shell or a material body, right? Because then that would refute the atheists like that. So if he allowed some material elements, because the city itself is spiritual, it's not made of matter, it's made of spirit. So whatever that was, you know, I mean, that dharma is eternally there, it just becomes unmanifest, or it goes to, you know, back to the spiritual world or whatever. But then Krishna may allow something material which resembles that to fall into the ocean. It says in the Bhagavatam that it's sunk into the ocean. So they may be finding something which is there, like that. So these things, for those kind of people, you know, they may need those kind of, that evidence to increase their faith. For us, we don't necessarily need that kind of evidence. And you'll see, like in the pastimes of Jesus, that, you know, he had to, like, you know, pull fish out of but he had to pull bread out of baskets and all this kind of stuff, you know, like mystic cities, walk on water, you know, pull bread out of the, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, before he gives the Sermon on the Mount, like he pulls out, like from one basket, he pulls out like hundreds of loaves of bread to feed everyone there. So, you know, why did he have to do that? For us, we didn't need Prabhupada to do something like that. We'll just sit down and listen to Prabhupada. But for them, they need like some show of, you know, something extraordinary in order to accept these things. So maybe, I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, my question is different, because a lot of devotees make pilgrimage to Dwarka, but I've heard people saying that it's not actually a pilgrimage site because Dwarka doesn't exist there anymore, and things like that. And now Lanka
is... Well, yeah, if that's the question, then that's not true, because the holy dharm, if you're reading Prabhupada's purports, then the holy dharm of Dwarka, right, of Vrindavan, of Mathura, of Jagannath Puri and Mayapur, these are eternal abodes of the Lord. They're eternal. So that place where Dwarka is the holy dharm. It's not a material place. It is the holy dharm, but it's uppercut. It's unmanifest at this point in time. But that is the dharm. That's not even an argument. Is that?
Yeah.
Any other points? Okay. Shall we profile again?